Collaboration.
Innovation.
The next idea.
The world doesn't stop. The world continues to change. So we as people need to change along with it.
As the catastrophe of the Flint water crisis unfolds, there's been a lot of talk of the failure of leadership. But our latest contributor to The Next Idea also believes that Flint highlights the failure of the water infrastructure that most of us rely on. With us now is Matthew Grokoff. He's the founder of Thrive Collaborative, and he's an advisor to the University of Michigan Blue Lab Living Building Challenge Team. He thinks it's time to embrace what he calls a new water ethic, along with an honest examination of our relationship with water. In doing so, he believes Flint could be the one to lead the way for the rest of us and become the world's first net positive water city. Good to have you with us, Matthew.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for talking about Flint as much as you have.
Well, certainly we have. And this was such an interesting idea that you offer in your essay for The Next Idea about this idea of being the world's first net positive water city. Now, we'll take it back to your house, the one that you live with and your family in Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. It's what you call a living demonstration of the future of net positive water. So basically, your house is rigged so it can make its own fresh water?
So that is what the University of Michigan Blue Lab team is working on. So what we have now is we're working under the standards of the Living Building Challenge, which is from the International Living Future Institute. And we're following the example of buildings actually all over the world right now. There's the Bullitt Center in Seattle, which is a net positive water and energy building. It's a multi-story office building that's harvesting all of its rainwater. It's managing all of its waste on site. And the building itself has become the infrastructure. And there's examples all over the world of these type buildings.
I think when we say net positive, meaning what?
Meaning that the water is a gift that's falling from the sky. And we have tended to treat water now in apocalyptic turns. We call it storm water. Mm. We have this three-pipe system that we've developed over the past 100 years, and it is on its last legs by every measure. This three-pipe system basically pipes water first into the house from the central treatment plant. It's clean, fresh drinking water that's treated with great expense, both dollar and energy-wise. Then we pee in it. Mm-hmm. We poop in it. We put our tampons in it. We put our chemical waste in it. We put our
dish soap.
We put our prescription drugs in it. And then we pipe it out through a second pipe. And we send it back to the municipality in the form of a sewer pipe. And in that sewer pipe, there's sulfide gases. There's just unimaginable bacteria.
Unimaginable is the word. Yeah.
And then we have this third pipe that has nothing to do with our drinking water or our sewage water. It's storm water. And again, created in apocalyptic terms rather than treated as a gift. And it's treated as something we have a problem with rather than as a resource. And so we have this problem now with these centralized systems. And there's nothing in nature that resembles these centralized linear systems, these kind of Rube Goldberg contraptions that if they fail, they fail big.
How will this work at your house?
Right. So then what we do, so rather than building these mega project, huge expense infrastructure projects that bring water to buildings, the buildings and the neighborhoods and the ecosystems become the infrastructure. So right now, with off-the-shelf technology, the University of Michigan students are taking our house and I call it a living demonstration because it's not an experiment. They're not using anything that isn't, like, you know, NSF certified, that exceeds EPA standards for drinking water. And it's the source water is all coming from the site.
So then, your source water would come from rain? Or
exactly. So the water that falls from the sky, we would get 100% of our water from precipitation.
How do you clean that? Because the air isn't what that it was water, back in, you know, 1776.
Exactly. So we polluted our air. We polluted our water. We polluted our rooftops. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, one of the first things the students did was test the quality of the rainwater. And they were shocked when the first thing that they found was lead in the rainwater. And it was not coming from the sky. It was coming from the roof shingles on top of our roof. So even as something as innocent as our roof shingles is actually polluting the rainwater that's coming into our system. So all of these thousands of rooftops quite possibly have lead in them, just like the Flint water does. So we replaced our roof system with a metal roof. Even if we did have that high level of lead in the drinking water, that water could then be sent into a cistern and then into a small treatment plant inside the house. And frankly, in rural areas are also doing this. Then that small treatment system is very basic. Again, it's off-the-shelf, common technology. It's something we didn't have 100 years ago, but we have now.
Okay. Then what happens with the water that goes – that gets flushed down the toilet or the water from the shower?
There's all kinds of extraordinary technologies that exist that everyone is using. And for every site, it's different. And different – and architects and design teams are – choosing different systems. There's all kinds of advances in membrane bioreactors, in UV filtration, in sand filtration, in living machines, which actually take the water using a natural ecosystem. The Omega Institute, which is a living building in Rhinebeck, New York, right? It's a cold climate just like Michigan is. Their entire campus treatment system is actually their yoga studio because they're growing bananas and flowers inside their sewage treatment plant, which is filtering tens of millions or millions of gallons of water every year, sewage water, into water at the end of the process after it goes through and is growing bananas that's clean enough to drink.
I'm talking with Matthew Grokoff, who's the founder of Thrive Collaborative and also an advisor to the University of Michigan Blue Lab Living Building Challenge Team, as we try to explore a new water ethic and ways that he believes Flint could show all of us by becoming the world's first net positive water city. So what you're talking about that you're working at your home, we have cities from coast to coast full of houses that are set up in every way to not be this. How do we turn the Titanic around and make it go a different direction?
That is the million-dollar question or the trillion-dollar question. Right now, the American Society of Civil Engineers says that Michigan rates a D for its water infrastructure, which we shouldn't feel too bad because nationwide, the average grade is a D. They estimate it'll take up to $1 trillion to replace the water infrastructure in the United States. How do you transition away from that? And that's a conversation we need to start having. The great thing now is that we can install – if you can install it in one home, you can install it in two. If you can install it in two, you can install it in five. Then we can start having the conversation about what is the best scale of the system. Should five homes share their same system? Should it be an entire neighborhood? Should it be a campus? Should it be, how can we work with the watershed? In California right now, these architects developed a software called Hazel that is actually geospatially mapping the areas to find where does nature want to filter and store water. And then using our intelligent engineering skills to put it into that natural infrastructure.
So working with nature instead of against nature.
Exactly. Instead of piping it up the hill, where can we put water and treat it down the hill?
And you're thinking, well, this could work for Flint since we're talking about really having to rip everything up. But I'm wondering, Matthew, what would you say to people who might be, if you will, even offended that you're recommending we try this out, something so radical and new with such a beleaguered city like Flint? I mean, do we want to be ironing out the kinks or making them, if you will, a petri dish for an experiment?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. What's radical is going back to the system that's already failed us. Because if we go through, everyone is screaming about whose fault is this? How much is this going to cost? How long is it going to take? And there are estimates, I think the governor's office said 15 years to rebuild the current system if we were to do that. And where does the money come from? That's radical when you think about that. And if we did it, it still wouldn't solve the same problems. Just the other day, there was a boil water alert in Flint that had nothing to do with where they were bringing their water in from. It had nothing to do with the lead pipes, and it had nothing to do with the transition of water from Detroit or the governor's office or anyone else. It had to do with a water main break that dropped the water pressure, causing a problem with the way that infrastructure works. So we have these same problems.
As I read what you're putting together for your home, and you think about the idea of, all right, here's the rain barrel, and it's collecting the rain. So you've got a family of four or five. What do you do when you're in the middle of the summer and it's a drought and you haven't seen
exactly
rain? Hey, then what?
That's a great point because a distributed system is actually more adaptable and you can adapt to future changes in climate and everything else based on the rainfall because the water and your relationship to it becomes adjacent. You understand exactly where the water is, where it's coming from, how much you're using. The perverse system is the one that we have now. The reason that Flint's water is so expensive is because if they have any kind of conservation efforts there or anywhere else, we have to raise water rates. If a car company leaves the city and this population drops, we have to raise the water rates because to maintain the whole system costs the same for any or all portions of it, whereas a distributed system costs only as much as the amount that people are using that water. So in a drought period, you can actually move – you can move water around. You can plan for those drought periods. You can have – you're storing the water where you need it, and you're working in balance with the natural flow of water rather than just assuming that it's some stable thing that's always there.
Interesting ideas put out by Matthew Grokoff, who's founder of Thrive Collaborative and an advisor to U of M's Blue Lab Living Building Challenge team. You'll find his essay on the next idea page at michiganradio.org. As always, we welcome your thoughts in the comments section there or on Michigan Radio's Facebook page or, as always, on Twitter at NextIdeaMI. Matthew, thanks so much for being part of the Next
Cindy,
Idea.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you for being here in Michigan. We're lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Support for the Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.
Could Detroit have the soccer version of the Green Bay Packers? We'll explain coming up. This is Stateside from Michigan Radio.